You've just tuned into Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Welcome back to Beyond Your Past. I'm your host, Matt Pappas, certified life coach specializing in overcoming anxiety and trauma recovery. And this podcast is all about helping you move forward from what holds you back. Each week, you'll hear from coaches, clinicians, and advocates who've overcome tremendous odds and are now using their journey to inspire you throughout yours. This is your place to feel validated and encouraged as you take your life back and live free from your past. Are you ready? Let's do this. Hey, greetings, my friend, and thanks so much for taking some time out of your day to tune into the show. And I hope that this episode inspires and encourages you on your own journey. Special welcome if you're listening to the podcast for the very first time. I hope that you'll enjoy it and perhaps consider checking out some other episodes as well. And for those of you who are regular listeners, you guys all rock. You're all amazing, and I always appreciate the support so very much. A big shout out to my amazing sponsors, INLPCenter.org, offering world-class online neurolinguistic programming and life coach training to people in over 70 countries. I'm honored to be able to receive my certifications and work with INLP Center and utilize their research and incredible training programs. And to Daily Recovery Support, interactive daily group calls in a safe atmosphere for survivors of complex trauma, equipping you with the skills and information you can use every single day in your healing journey. Learn more about this affordable resource and get signed up at cptsdfoundation.org. If you find these podcasts helpful, please consider subscribing and leaving a review on your favorite podcasting app. That would be great. So today I'm joined by special guest Melanie Vaughn. Melanie is a clinician, coach, program director for Mental Health News Radio, and the founder of YourWiseTherapist.com, which specializes in mental health consulting and helping provide access to mental health treatment professionals, both individually and in the workplace. Melanie helped recruit this podcast to become a part of Mental Health News Radio, and working alongside her, the network's founder, Kristen Walker, and everyone at MHNR has been an incredible experience, and I'm honored to be part of this network of podcasters. So during our chat, we are talking all things anxiety, specifically how learning to be fully present and developing emotional regulation skills can greatly help us understand our anxiety triggers and situations so we can take control of anxiety instead of it controlling us. We discuss the importance of sharing this type of information with our children so they too can understand how anxiety affects them in school and throughout their developmental years, and hopefully give them an edge against anxiety as they continue to grow into adults. We share, swap stories, and talk about the benefits of equine therapy and being around horses to also help with anxiety. The ability of a horse to mirror back to you what you are presenting to them can give you great insight into your own ability to regulate your emotions and be fully present with the animal. This kind of understanding about ourselves has great benefits all throughout life. Talking with Melanie about horses brought back so many fond memories of my time riding, and I'm forever grateful to the lessons I learned from both Casey and Gentleman's Choice. Two horses that made a huge impact on my life as a teenager, and quite honestly, two of my best friends in my early teenage years. All this and so much more during my chat about anxiety with Melanie Vaughn, starting right now. So, hey, Melanie, welcome to Beyond Your Past. What is going on?
Hey, Matt. What's going on with you? I'm happy to be here today.
I'm so excited to have you. I know you and I had tried to connect last fall and things didn't work out with schedules, but I'm glad to get you here early on in 2019. And we're going to talk about anxiety, which is one of my favorite things to talk about. And of course, the work that you're doing with MHNR Network and your work with horses and all kinds of great stuff. But before we do that, take a minute if you like and tell everybody more about you and anything you want to share about who Melanie is.
Yeah, well, Melanie Vaughn, and I am the program director at Mental Health News Radio Network, which is where your podcast lands. We're so excited. We love having you on the network, by the way. So love your podcast.
Well, thank you.
What you're doing. Yeah, we like it. We like you, Matt. It's a good thing. Just doing that, I also actually just started a new LLC of my own back in September. Really just very green at this point. I don't even have any clients yet. I'm still working on building the website, but the name of my LLC is Your Wise Therapist. So you can find that at yourwisetherapist.com. It is a behavioral health consulting firm, basically. So Kristen and I, who is the CEO of Mental Health News Radio, we came up with a hashtag. I guess it's been about a year and a half ago, maybe, and the hashtag is Mental Healthified. So basically, if you're mental healthified, you're in the know about mental health. And that's what we try to do for all our listeners, is help them become mental healthified, because we want everyone to be educated. So we're starting some, basically, Your Wise Therapist is, an affiliate in a way, but separate to Mental Health News Radio, because we have so many people that write in and want counseling and want to know therapists that specialize in certain things, and we never really know where to send them. So it's kind of bifold. So one, we do mental health awareness campaigns in corporate America. That's one thing that Your Wise Therapist can do to help educate workplaces about mental health and how it affects productivity, etc. And number two, it's basically a vetting source for therapists. So we all know how it is to end up in a bad therapist office, right? So really, we're trying to build a network of clinicians that we know have a good reputation and that we believe in, so that our listeners have a place to go and can find what they need, whether it be through a life coach or through webinars or educational series, anything like that. So super excited about it. Like I said, it's still very new, but in 2019, we're hoping to get everything rolling, and hopefully it'll turn out to be a nice little company to the podcast network. That's about it. That's
absolutely
all I got going on. Yeah.
Well, really, is that all?
That's all. I mean, and I do equine therapy, and let's not talk about me so much. We got to get this thing going. But yeah, I do a lot of different things. I'm multidimensional for sure.
This podcast is all about you and your message. And by the way, I can't wait to talk about the horses too, because I spent a good portion of my early years on horses, and it was a great experience. So We'll definitely get into that as we go along. I love where you're going with this new direction and the new corporation. And of course, being part of the network has always been, it's been such a great experience. You and Kristen and everybody are just amazing. And I'm grateful to be on board with you guys, and I'm absolutely happy to be here too. So let's kind of talk a little bit about anxiety, because it's something that, you have a message to share about it. I obviously deal with it all the time in terms of clients, and it's part of my coaching and online program. So maybe give us a little bit of a background, if you like to start off with how anxiety has kind of affected your life and the way it manifests itself, perhaps in the past and or now.
Anxiety was such a part of my life from the time I was a little girl. I didn't even know how to recognize it. Once I got into more of an awareness space of anxiety and how I live my life, I used to always just say, well, I'm a worrier. Like, I worry a lot, or, I tend to be this way, or I get a little nervous, or whatever. And in reality, as I've gotten older, I look back even into my childhood, in social situations or even at home, where anxiety was definitely an issue. And I remember, being in social situations and not really feeling like I fit in, or not really knowing how to fit in with it. It just was never natural for me. Like, I never understood how other kids could be so comfortable, and so I didn't know how to put a name on it back then, but now I can look at it and say, wow, that was just like severe anxiety. As a 5 and 6 year old, I remember in kindergarten having those things and remember little coping mechanisms that I did even back then to kind of help me deal with the anxiety. And one of those things was just like go off in my own world, right? I had this big imagination. So if I could kind of separate myself from it, then I could find this place of sense and calm. And I did a lot of just going in my room and kind of shutting the door. So looking back, anxiety has definitely been a part of my life from a very early age. And it affected my schoolwork. I definitely had test anxiety. As I got older and into high school, I actually took tests and stuff outside of the classroom. I would just move my desk out into the hall, because it would become very difficult. Once everyone else started finishing their tests before me, it would make me very anxious and I would just kind of lose my train of thought. And it was very hard for me to complete things after that. So, again, there's it's been around forever. And as I got older, I was able to find a name for it and to really understand. I think the biggest thing about anxiety, is that you never live in the moment when you're anxious. And in the moment is where we grow. It's where our gifts are. It's how we find our joy and our happiness. And when you're constantly worried about the future or the past, you're never really in the moment. And so I feel like it's very hard to find contentment and joy when you're consistently anxious. So I feel like, you know, the key to having those things and kind of getting your feet under you again is learning how to manage the anxiety so that you can be in the moment and grow as an individual.
Yeah, that is absolutely huge. And everything that you mentioned is stuff that so many of us have dealt with. Something that I know my kids have felt. Now that I kind of, you know, have more knowledge about it, I wish people would have told me about this when I was a kid, which is like the angel thing of, you know, I wish I knew then what I know now kind of thing. But I think I think one of the good things is that because you and I know what it feels like and we have some coping skills that we can utilize. We understand what being fully present means and how that can be a great coping skill against, you know, feeling anxious and all those types of things. That's something that we can pass along to friends and family and kids and spouses and everybody, you know, just to kind of pass on that knowledge, because you're right. Like when you're a kid, if somebody doesn't tell you, you have no idea what this exactly. jittery feeling is. You know, what this nervous feeling is. And now again, of course, if you're a kid now, you know, people may tell you and you may not listen because you're a kid and I probably wouldn't have listened either, but you know, having the benefit of being older and being through this, I think is something that, you know, maybe sometimes we don't always think about as being something really positive in this area is being able to pass on that knowledge because, you know, we can kind of stop the cycle, hopefully, over time of children not understanding what anxiety is at such a young age. And of course, you mentioned test anxiety, which is gigantic. But all these types of things of being able to say, okay, this is, you know, what you're feeling is an anxious feeling based on this stressor and the circumstance and the people around you. These are some skills that you can use to help yourself. And I really think that the more we keep talking about it, especially in our own inner circles, and of course, then on the podcast, it really, over time, I think can have a dramatic benefit on the younger generation, at least in my opinion.
Oh, I think so too. I mean, and you understand this, Matt, because, you know, you have kids. So my son, who is now 17, at a very early age, I'd say around 7 or 8 years old, started having nightmares, and he would go to bed at night, and he had never had problems going to sleep, you know, always just been such an easy kid. And he would come and get me and he'd be like, Mom, I feel like I'm forgetting something. Like he would lay down to go to bed at night and he would just get this over. That was the only way he knew how to describe it to me, that he was forgetting something. In reality, it was anxiety. And so it started with him around 7 or 8. And it's so interesting because I watched him experience some of the same things that I did. And I feel like his social anxiety didn't really raise its head until he became a teenager. And I was the exact same way. He kind of went through puberty and all of a sudden, you know, he went from being this extremely outgoing kid, you know, very well known, popular, to, you know, and a great athlete. So the first place that I really saw it was on the basketball court, because he was a great basketball player. The kid's 6'6", you know, just as skinny as they come, tall guy, great basketball player, and would do wonderful in practice, and then would get to a game and just freeze. And, you know, then you have to deal with his teammates not understanding what was wrong, his coaches not understanding what was wrong, and him not even really understanding, why is it when I get out here, I can't even think straight, but I do fantastic in practice. So that's where it really started to show its head and didn't really get addressed. I don't feel like it should have, and eventually turned into this severe anxiety where he was having full-blown panic attacks at school, wasn't telling me about it. He had gym the last period of the day in high school. So he would come home with like a head, you know, his head would be soaking wet with sweat. And I'm like, buddy, like, what did y'all do in gym today? He'd be like, oh, this, that, and the other. And then finally, the truth comes out is that, you know, study hall or art class, he would sit in class and just have a full-blown panic attack every day and just get, you know, a full sweaty head, which if you understand anxiety, those are severe panic attacks. And he just wasn't telling me, even though I'm a clinician, he was just trying to deal with it on his own. And obviously that became an issue. But I remember, I mean, I was active in sports. And I want parents to hear this, because if you see these things happening with your kids, please try to get them some help. Take them to a counselor. Help them have better coping skills to learn how to manage their anxiety. I remember playing sports, and the same thing happened to me. So I played softball. I was in gymnastics. I played volleyball. And the same exact thing would happen. So I look back on my career, and I'm like, wow, you know, I might could have had a scholarship if I didn't freeze when I got out to bat. Or if I didn't freeze when it was my turn to spike the ball, you know, and so it really, really affected my ability to perform. That performance anxiety is huge. And then it becomes not only on, you know, the basketball court or the gym floor, it gets into other areas of your life, and it really can just become debilitating if you don't step in and do something. So if your kid's having these issues, please try to help them learn how to identify and manage the anxiety, because it can make your life so much harder, and it's exhausting. It's exhausting trying to manage anxiety. I know you agree with me.
I could not agree more. At feeling anxious and then, of course, you know, when that moves into the realm of anxiety, and then you get into, you know, social anxiety and generalized anxiety disorder and all the different parts of it. It is absolutely exhausting to try and wake up every day and not be able to stop worrying, to stop freezing, to stop overthinking, to stop overanalyzing, to stop everything. And you're right. I mean, the more that we can be aware, and, you know, I think a lot of times, I mean, I did this, it sounds like you did this, is, you know, we didn't tell anybody, partly because maybe we didn't understand. There's also a bit of a shame factor that goes in, because, you know, there's so much pressure of school and peer. And now, of course, you have all the social media. And so you don't want to feel vulnerable or like you can't handle something because, you know, you have to fit in and you don't want to be laughed at and all that. But anxiety just affects so many people in so many different ways. And of course, if there's other circumstances, you know, if you're a trauma survivor, then there's a whole new type of thing to have to deal with. So you're right. I think just watching the signs in your kids, seeing how they react, see if their grades start to drop.
Yep.
You know, if you start to get notes from the teachers or they suddenly don't want to go to school. I mean, I can tell you, Melanie, I used to wake up and I did not want to go to school, and I would beg my mom. I'm like, for the love of God, I don't want to go. I can't stand it.
Yeah.
And you know, now that was partly because of the bullying, but it was also just because I was so worried about a test. I was so worried about fitting in. I was so worried about, you know, getting in trouble for something that I hadn't even, you know, I mean, I wasn't doing anything wrong necessarily, but I had all these over anxious thoughts that I could never shut off when I was in school. And then of course that carried over into being an adult. Of course, now you're in the workplace and you've got responsibilities and a job and a family and bills and everything that comes with being an adult. And if you don't get a handle of it when you're younger, it can be just twice as difficult to try and rein it in and get control of it when you're older.
Yeah, because, you know, anxiety isn't a loop in your brain, really, if people don't understand how anxiety works physiologically. And one of the great things about anxiety, which there aren't many great things, right, is that if you can learn how to kind of check your body out of it physiologically, then you can learn how to manage it mentally. So we all know how we feel when you're anxious. You know, your heart rate increases, your breathing shortens. You know, and so this becomes like a constant state of fight or flight, and it's really hard to get your body out of that. So there's grounding techniques you can do. There's breathing techniques that you can utilize. There's all sorts of things that you can do to kind of get your body out of going into that stress response and that anxiety response. And then that can help you learn how to manage the mental side of things. But yeah, I mean, I never didn't want to go to school. My 17-year-old, he wanted to go to school, but he definitely had his struggles. You know, he would come home and sleep for 4 or 5 hours every single day after school. And it was because it was absolutely exhausting because he had like this image to maintain. I was very much the same way. Like I said, he's this popular kid. He's kind of a little clown. His friends depend on him to like be a certain person. So he would go to school and try to be this person that everyone thought he was. And on the inside, he was crumbling. And so it was just so exhausting for him to have to put on, you know, a front. And not let other people see just how, you know, just how bad things were on the inside. So, I think checking out of that and learning some techniques to learn how to get your body out of the stress response is essential. And those are things that you can teach even little kids that struggle with anxiety. You can teach them how to meditate. You can teach them how to do some, you know, kind of constrict and releasing of their muscles to help calm, get their blood pressure back down. There's definitely things you can teach even young kids to help them, you know, learn how to manage their anxiety. It just takes a little bit of time.
Yeah, it does. And so many other things you're talking about, being able to kind of, you know, like we always say, kind of check in with your body and how am I feeling right now? And, you know, am I feeling anxious? Am I worried? Am I a little wobbly or, you know, unsure of myself? Where's this coming from? And, you know, and literally it's something that once you kind of get the technique down or a way that to do it that feels natural to you, you can literally do it within a few seconds. Anytime you even perhaps are going to enter into a situation where you know you would normally feel anxious. And this is kind of getting in the realm of heading it off with the pass. For example, if you're going out if you're going into a meeting with your boss and you know in the past, well, you know, I usually feel kind of unsure of myself. I'm not real confident. Maybe this boss has a habit of tearing me down or, you know, whatever the case is, you can kind of say, okay, I have a meeting in 5-10 minutes. How am I feeling right now? And do some grounding techniques, you know, to kind of check in with yourself and maybe head it off a little bit at the pass. So you walk in, not immediately defaulting to the response of being anxious or feeling jittery or nauseous or whatever it is, but you walk in and you're grounded, you're confident, you know what to expect. And that I find is a big part of really combating anxiety. Like one of the things that I've learned that I teach and that works well for me is using logic and rational thinking to slow down the anxiety, right? Because I mean, you know, especially like if you're an emotional person, and I'll tell you for me, I mean, I use logic as much as the next guy, but I'm a creative type. I guess I'm a bit kind of on the emotion side. So for me to be able to use logic at first, it sounded kind of weird and I wasn't really buying into it. But when you can really like, you know, I teach about anxiety being full of tricks and lies, and I'm like, okay, how can I expose this kind of emotional state or this irrational thinking, if you want to use that term, into something that seems more doable, something that seems more realistic? And I'm like, well, you know, is everything that my mind is telling me right now actually going to happen? Probably not. You know, is the absolute worst case scenario probably going to happen? Probably not. And when you, and you know, just taking a few seconds to break that down, you immediately feel more confident. And that's something that, you know, I try to teach as often as I can, because it's something you can do pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's like classic cognitive behavioral therapy in the therapist world, right? And I'm a clinician. Mm-hmm. So when you're looking at CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, that's what you're doing. You're taking, so like if you were doing a CBT activity, you know, in an office or doing some homework that your clinician has given you, you might have one, you know, column where you write down your irrational thoughts. So in one column, you're writing down an irrational thought, just anything that pops in your head. And the next column, you may write down things that defute that thought. So you write down how it's unrealistic. And then the next column, you would write down a healthier type of statement. And so literally, you're like training your brain by writing this stuff down to get out of those patterns of thinking. Because, you know, when you're anxious, and everyone knows this, that suffers from anxiety, you literally like dig a groove in your brain of the anxiety thoughts, of the anxious way of thinking about things. So part of what CBT does and what you're talking about is logically trying to rationalize with yourself that these things aren't going to happen. You can literally, it's, you know, it's that neuroplasticity. So you can change the way your brain thinks and where your brain goes first when you start to get anxious. And it just takes practice. And another piece of it, too, is something called desensitization, which just basically means you put yourself in same situations over and over that typically make you anxious, and you will become less and less and less and less anxious. And I have a tiny example of that. So for the longest time, I like worked out at home. I grew up in gyms. I've worked out since I was 13. I was a personal trainer all throughout college to help me with some extra funds. And so I've always worked out. The past probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 years of my life, I've worked out at home. I just kind of got over the gyms. I had a baby, so I really didn't want to take him into the gym space. And anyway, so I was just working out at home. Well, me staying at home can be really bad to the point of agoraphobia. I would never diagnose myself with that, but it got to the point where I got anxious about going anywhere. So when I first started coming to the gym again, I was surprised at myself, even how anxious. I mean, I literally grew up in gyms all my life. I've always enjoyed the environment, and I would walk in the gym and I would get anxious, and I would literally almost talk myself out of going. But no matter what, I still went, and I was like, I don't want to get on that treadmill at home. You know, that's just lonely and I'm not feeling it, you know? So I pushed myself. And now I'm completely over it, and I don't get anxious at all. And I've slowly started to be a little bit more social. I've at least talked to people at work there. I'll wave and smile, whereas before it was just like head down. I'm going in, I'm getting my stuff done, earphones in, and I'm out, you know? But over time that changed. And sometimes that's just what you have to do again to change that pattern, to change the reactivity, and learn how to, you know, get past some of those anxious thinking patterns, which are really hard. It's really hard. I don't want our audience to think that it's easy, because it's not. It takes cognitive attention to get past anxiety. And sometimes it does require medication. Sometimes your body just needs a break so that you can actually utilize the cognitive techniques to make things better.
Yeah. And it bears repeating just so often, is that this stuff, you know, whether it's anxiety or whatever it is that you're going through, it's not something where it's just going to go away over time. You don't just get over it. It is something that takes, especially early on when you're learning techniques, you're trying to figure out what works for you and what doesn't. Doing it over and over, repetition really helps give you that confidence. So, you know, as we mentioned about neuroplasticity, is building a new default pathway, a default way to cope with something, so you're not, you know, immediately going to that anxious feeling or avoiding it, or, you know, as you mentioned, possibly agoraphobia, staying at home because you're afraid to go anywhere. And so you use the techniques that you mentioned to kind of gently expose yourself to that situation little by little and build up a tolerance, build up confidence. You've got skills, you know, you can see it from a realistic point of view as to what's really happening. And suddenly, before you know it, you don't feel quite as anxious. You feel more confident. You're like, I got this. You know, this is a gym. This is a line at Walmart. This is a line at the grocery store. This is something that happens at work that used to really cause me to go into my shell, to start worrying, to start fidgeting, to feel anxious, nauseous, all these things. And now I'm like, I got this. And so I think it does. I try to say it as many times as I can. It does take time. It takes a lot of repetition. But man, when you start to see just the benefits of that kind of, you know, showing itself in everyday life, you're like, wow. Like, yeah. This stuff really works.
Well, and your life opens up. Like, that's kind of what I'm thinking about right now. I think about as time went on, and instead of like this inward type of life that I think anxiety can create, you kind of bloom back out and you realize just how much there is in life to experience. And for people that don't suffer from anxiety, I don't think they really have any idea how suffocating it is and how debilitating it is. And it's not something people can just get over. And how isolating it is. You know, it's not that we don't want to live full lives. It's not that we don't want to be present and be able to enjoy what's right in front of us. It's just literally an inability to do so. And it really can, again, like we were talking at the beginning, take away your ability to be in the moment about anything. And again, that's where all of our information is. That's where we can kind of talk about horses, because I feel like it's one of the biggest gifts that my horses gave me. And that is learning how to be in the moment, because you have to be in the moment with the horse, or they're not going to pay attention to you. And it's also dangerous. And so being around horses, because they're in the moment all the time, because they're prey animals, right? So they have to be in like complete awareness of what's going on around them all the time. And I mean, to this day, I can pull in, you know, at the farm where they're boarded. And as soon as I see them, I'm instantly taken to a place of being in the moment. And eventually, after spending more time with them, it carried over into other areas of my life. I don't know if that's how your experience was with horses, Matt, but it definitely, you know, helped me to not be anxious in general.
Oh, absolutely. And it's actually a perfect segue into the whole topic of horses. So well done, Melanie. I think you might be a veteran podcaster. I don't know. But yeah, I'll tell you, like, and you know, just to kind of reiterate, the mindfulness is such a great way to combat anxiety, living in the moment. And you're right. I mean, animals in general, I found, you know, if you have dogs or cats, like, dogs or cats don't care about anything other than giving you love and attention, having food and water, and, you know, running and sniffing and doing all the stuff they do. Like, they don't care about anything about being totally present in the moment, and they're not necessarily looking ahead. And with horses, they do have to be in the moment in a different way. When we were talking about horses before we started here, I was taken back. Like, my sister had horses all her life. Early middle school up through high school, I had horses, and I used to show horses, both English and Western. I rode, I mean, obviously trail riding and everything, but the connection that you have with a horse, for those who have the opportunity to ride horses or perhaps do some equine therapy or just to go and be around a horse, like, the calming effect is almost instantaneous, right? I mean, when I used to ride, I would pull up to the barn, like you mentioned, and I would just, like, instantly be like, ah, it's all good now. Like, things are good. And the last horse that I had before he passed away, he was a quarter horse. He was gray, and I broke him, like, literally from the time he was a colt. And he acted like a dog, because every time I would drive up, like, he knew the sound of my car.
Yep.
And he would run up to the fence and start whinnying and kicking and carrying on like a banshee. And it was just great, because that connection, like, he knew me, I knew him, and then you get in the saddle or you just walk him around the field, and you just feel like life is good. Like, nothing else matters right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a definite place of safety, when you're with your horse. And that is, like, it's just magic. And like I said, if you're going to spend time with a horse and if you're going to have a relationship with a horse and they're going to actually listen to you, you have to learn how to check out of your worry, because, I mean, they're just not even going to engage with you. They're not going to engage with you if your mind is somewhere else. That's what I have found. And it varies from horse to horse, I feel like, but just being able to do that and having that safe place. I mean, you know, imagine what these horses must have to overcome to be domesticated, to give themselves to us, to let us get on their back. Imagine what they must have to overcome, right? And for the most part, horses are the most, like, zen, relaxed animals there are. Like, most of the time when you see horses, they're just standing around grazing, right? They constantly stay in that calm state of mind, because that's survival for them. Now, when there's a threat, they'll get into high anxiety mode. You're going to see the whites of their eyes, but within milliseconds, and I know you've seen this, they can go right back down to being calm. I mean, horses just have that mastered. They can get upset and all worked up, and then in a matter of seconds, they're right back down to just chewing the cud and walking around and everything being fine, right? So there's no predisposition. There's no baggage of any sort with a horse. Again, they're just in the moment, and it is such a beautiful lesson for us humans, right? To be able to do that. I love it. I love working with horses.
Oh yeah. It's amazing. Right. And you are exactly right. You know, I just remember many times, you know, riding along perhaps a trail or something, and, you know, the horse's head is down. You're just kind of, you know, riding along by yourself. Maybe you're with somebody, and all of a sudden they get spooked for a second, you know, maybe like a squirrel runs out or the leaves ruffle and you know, they kind of dart up and, you know, their eyes open and their ears go up and they're kind of dancing around for a few seconds. But then after it passes and then they realize it's all good and you're there calming them down, their heads back down and they're just plodding along like everything's great. So,
yeah.
I mean, we can take a whole lot of knowledge and learn a lot from horses in that way. just because they're able to really kind of come back to a baseline and even a completely relaxed line, you know, of living, of just being so quickly. And, you know, for us as people, we can strive to get to that kind of resiliency as well, that ability to bounce back, to where after we get into an anxious type of situation, we're able to not let it hang on and hang on. You know, maybe there's like an instant stressor that comes, and then, but instead of thinking about it and overthinking it and dwelling on it for the next 4 or 5 hours or all day long, we can use the techniques that we've been talking about on this podcast and come back to what I'd like to say a baseline is usually what I call it, but just being, you know, being here, being present with where we are and not letting that stuff linger on to where it becomes chronic anxiety, chronic worry, and that's kind of stuff. And of course, that's where, you know, horses just have such a knack for it.
They do. And, you know, the other piece of that is that horses are a mirror for us, right? So generally, they're going to mirror back to us whatever state of mind we're in. So if you walk up to a horse and you're just full of anxiety and you're scared, they're more than likely going to mirror that exact feeling back to you because they're so intuitive. That's how they survived all these years, is understanding and picking up energy around them, right? They communicate through body language. So even if you think you're not anxious and you're trying not to be anxious, but you are anxious, they're going to mirror back to you exactly what you're feeling in the moment. And sometimes that's what we need to see as humans to be able to address the behavior, right? Because anxiety keeps you so in your head, you can't even see it. So when you've got this mirror standing back at you that's showing you exactly how you are and you can see it, then it's almost like you overcome your anxiety to help calm the horse. So therefore, you're building those skills within yourself to be able to overcome it and get to a different place so that you can actually spend time with the animal. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes total sense. You're exactly right. I can't tell you how many times when I was learning to ride, and especially if you're going to show a horse.
Yeah.
I mean, if you are nervous and anxious and fidgety, the horse is going to be dancing all over creation. And, you know, it's not going to be a good experience. Yeah. And I remember my instructors when I was learning, they were like, you need to calm down. You know, I mean, they could see how tense I was in the saddle and how much I was, you know, gripping the reins for dear life and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, well, I'm scared to death. And the horse is, and they're telling me like the horse is not going to respond to you unless you kind of get it on under control. Now, they maybe said it in different words and use some expletives at times, but, you know, the same principles apply. As you're right, the horse will mirror back to you exactly what you're feeling. And when you get to a point where you're able to be calm and relaxed and be confident so the horse can respond to you, then everything is much more smoother. It's more fluid. It's more relaxed. And you feel much more confident. And of course, you know, that translates not only into the show ring, but obviously on the trail as well. I mean, if you're trail riding, the last thing you want to do is be tense. Like, you're supposed to be relaxing. And
yeah,
we could swap horror stories all day long, I'm sure.
I mean, it's about that. It's like about emotional congruence. So it teaches you how to be congruent with your own emotions. Like, a horse would much rather you just be anxious and be real in it than to go out there and try not to be anxious when you really are. Like, that's when they're most comfortable. And also emotional regulation. So if you don't have good skills with regulating your emotions, then, you know, being around a horse can help you do that. I have this gelding that is just like, which is a lot of people don't know what a gelding is. It's a fixed stallion. So it's a stallion that can no longer produce. And so a neutered male horse basically is a gelding. So, and he was just so exciting, Matt. Like, he's this paint horse. He's big. He's exciting to ride. He's fun. He was young when I first got him. And I was so excited. Like, all I wanted to do was get on the horse and just like take off into a gallop, you know? And so when I got on him, that was the energy that he felt, because every time I got on him, I was so excited because he was so fun to ride. So I would get on and he would just like take off because that's what I was feeling. You know what I mean? And I really had to learn how to regulate, like, okay, calm down, because whatever feeling you're feeling when you get on his back, that is what he's going to show you. So, I mean, it really is. And he could just feel that energy and that excitement of me just wanting to get on him and go. And so I had to really learn how to regulate my feelings, so that we could actually, you know, have a good time together and do some good horseback riding. But anyway, it was kind of funny because it was just like, just over and over again, I would get on his back and I would tell myself, all right, I'm not going to be excited about riding him today. And I would get on him and he would just like bolt and go and dance. And I was like, yep, that's pretty much how I feel right now. Because yeah. Whereas my mare, I was just more comfortable around and I could be more regulated, you know. But it's so funny because, mm-hmm. you know, in the equine world, you know, I don't know, maybe that's how I feel when I get around guys in general, right? I don't know. I definitely learned how to figure it out and learned how to, you know, regulate my feelings around those types of situations. So it's such good stuff. Like you said, we could
stories
all day long. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. And I can tell you, I mean, just as we start to wrap this up here, I have so many fond memories of getting on one of the horses I had who I got when he was, this was so long ago. I think he was like 7 or 8 at the time. He was this beautiful 16-2 hand Appaloosa with a white blanket and a brown face, like a chocolate brown with a white blaze on his nose. Oh my God. Coolest horse ever. And his name was Gentleman's Choice. So I called him Gent. And he was, he wasn't like a snooty horse, but he was just very, when you looked at him, you were just like, this horse has it together. This horse knows who he is. This horse is confident in its ability to jump, to trail ride, to hang out and with other horses. And so it was so cool, but I named him Gentleman's Choice and we called him Gent, but he was that kind of horse to where he just inspired confidence in you. And he really was the one that helped me to learn how to ride because he was very forgiving. He liked, you know, the show ring, he liked the pasture, he liked everything in between, but he was kind of like, he carried me for a long time. He was very forgiving in that he helped me to learn about myself and learn how to ride. And, you know, being younger at the time, that translated into life outside of horses when I was, you know, in school or doing things outside of the barn. I can remember feeling, you know, trying to emulate the feeling that I was, you know, that I had when I was riding him, when I was out in the world. Now, being younger, I couldn't always do it, but I had that awareness then that the benefits did carry over.
Yeah, they definitely do. It's wonderful work. So any parents out there or even adults that struggle with anxiety, if you can find a local program where they're utilizing equine therapy of any sort, you might definitely want to check into it because this quick work, it's definitely considered, you know, a short-term basis type of therapy because it just happens so quick because it's real life experience. You're not just sitting in, you know, an office with four walls trying to figure stuff out. You're actually out in the open participating and learning how to deal with these things on your own. So I definitely suggest it if you've got a teen or a child or even yourself is struggling with anxiety, is something to try for sure.
Absolutely. And what a perfect way to wrap up this podcast. Melanie, this has been awesome. I love talking about anxiety and horses and animals and everything. So thanks so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it. And before we go, though, let everybody know again where they can find you and about you and your website going on. And of course, everything about the network.
Yeah, well, again, I'm the program director at Mental Health News Radio. You can find us at mentalhealthnewsradio.com or you can also find us at mhnrnetwork.com. It all goes to the same place. And you can also have your own podcast. So if you're interested in having a podcast or being a guest host or doing a series, you can certainly do that. You can find all that information on the site. And then my new website is called yourwisetherapist.com. That's yourwisetherapist.com. You can go there. You can find out about the Mental Health Divide campaign we have. I also do mediating and behavioral health consulting if you've got problems within your organization with morale. And then also we are building our network of clinicians that we vet and go through, you know, a series of things to help our listeners find the best of the best out there. And that we're currently working on and that will just continue to grow. So thank you, Matt. Thank you so much for having me on. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Information shared on this podcast is intended for educational and informational purposes only and is not a substitute for or supersedes professional medical help or mental health counseling. Thank you again to my sponsors, INLPCenter.org and Daily Recovery Support. I hope you'll consider checking them out as they've joined forces to help keep the lights on here at the podcast and help Beyond Your Past reach as many as possible with a message of hope.
If you'd like to learn more about working with me as your coach, or if you're curious about what life coaching is and how it might be right for you, then head on over to beyondyourpast.com and claim your free 1-hour session, where we can talk about the struggles in your life in the areas of anxiety and trauma recovery and see if coaching might be a great fit for you. Thanks again for listening, and I do hope that you'll subscribe to the podcast, leave a review, and share it with all your friends. See you next time.